My first introduction to the performing arts was as a young girl growing up in Blackheath. There was an outreach project done by Philip Boyd and his then wife, the late prima ballerina assoluta Phyllis Spira. And they had an outreach project where they actually went to many townships and they came to Blackheath and they taught us ballet and started this absolute passion, which I now get a chance to experience again later on in life. But I'm so grateful because that to me opened my eyes in terms of how art can level the playing fields for young kids as they grow up. Mr. Philip Boyd, I am so delighted to have you as one of my first guests for this, the third season of Audacity. And I just wanted to say, firstly, thank you for introducing me to the world of art. I only realize in hindsight the fact that you brought ballet to Blackheath with your outreach project back in the 80s. It made such a huge impact on my life. So thank you for being part of the journey that brought me here.
Pleasure.
Let me start from the beginning. Your career as, I would say, one of the most prolific, impactful ballet dancers in South Africa. Where did your career start?
Well, I started training in Johannesburg and I was 7 years old. Mm-hmm. My mother was very ill at the time. My mother was professor of English at Wits University. She was actually Irish, but she was a medievalist and she taught medieval English. And my father was a doctor of mechanical engineering. So I came from a very academic background. Mm-hmm. I was not academic at all. I mean, not that I was stupid, but it didn't interest me in the least. Anyway, I had a girlfriend who used to go to ballet classes in the afternoons. And I went along one day and I joined in my shorts and tackies. And I thought, this is lovely, all these lovely girls, and I was the only boy. And so that's how I started. Went home, said to my father, I want to dance. He knew nothing about the arts at all. He was a complete Philistine, and he said, okay, fine. And that's really how I started. My teacher was Dorothy DeWitt, a brilliant teacher who's in fact still teaching. She's in her 80s now in Johannesburg. And then when I was about 16, I think I auditioned to go to the National School of the Arts. And we lived in Park Town, so it was in walking distance. And I went there from Standard 6 onwards. And then when I was about 18, I think it was Dulcie Howes, who was the founder director of Cape Ballet and UCT Ballet School, said that she wanted to see me and she felt it was time that I had a male teacher. And I was actually thinking that I would like to go to the Royal Ballet School or to Stuttgart Ballet, called John Cranko was the director of the Stuttgart Ballet. He was a former South African. And but the Royal Ballet was also quite expensive. My parents couldn't afford it. And so Dulcie said, we have a wonderful teacher, male teacher, in Cape Town called Dudley Tomlinson. And you'll get equally good as training in Cape Town as you would in London.
Yeah.
So in 1974, I came to Cape Town. And I got a Dulcie Howes bursary. And I did the three-year performance course at UCT. And then all of us whiteys had to do national service in those days. And the funny thing, Joanne, is that if you were white and you were a South African, you couldn't get a job unless you did your national service. And in fact, you couldn't get a passport, you couldn't get an ID book until you did that national service. So I then did my national service in 1977, I think it was. I went to 3 Sy Infantry Battalion in Potchefstroom. Did my basic training there, and then I was transferred to 11 Commando in Kimberley. And the amazing thing is that I was never ragged by being a ballet dancer. People got to know that I was a dancer. And I think because I had short, like I've got now, had very short hair, and people thought I looked like Bruce Lee and thought I was this great karate exporter.
But I mean, ballet, you've got the same dexterity as a karate fighter.
So I thought, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And David Poole, who was our director at the ballet school, wrote to Magnus Malan, who was the chief of the Defence Force, and said that I was very talented and could they allow me to get a transfer back to Cape Town. So eventually I did. I got transferred to Cape Town and I worked at the castle in the confidential registry. It was like a glorified post office, really. And but yeah,
the castle, quite befitting to somebody who had grown up as the son of somebody teaching medieval histories English.
Yeah. And anyway, it was actually a wonderful time at the castle because it was very sophisticated. And, in fact, that's where I really learned quite a lot and made a lot of quite good friends who I'm still friendly with. But in the afternoons, I became a two-stripe corporal, and in the afternoons, I was able to go to UCT Ballet School and start my training all over again, because I'd obviously lost a lot. Yes. And then
the body remembers.
The body remembers, yes, muscle memory. And then in 1979, I joined Capo Ballet, as it was then. And in 1980, I became a principal dancer with the company. And my first principal role was as Albrecht in the ballet Giselle.
One of my favorite ballets, and a very, very, it takes quite a lot of energy and artistry to do Albrecht.
Yeah. And my first dance partner was Nicolette Loxton, who you probably would remember. And we danced a lot together.
Oh, wow.
And the company was quite big at the time. There were probably 65 dancers in the company.
This was in the 80s.
In the 80s, yeah.
Very different time for ballet. Absolutely, in terms of funding.
And of course, then it was the Performing Arts Councils, and they were all supported by the government. We had the four Performing Arts Councils in South Africa. There was PAC Ballet in Johannesburg, NAPAC in Durban, PACOFS in Bloemfontein and Cape Ave and Cape Town. And each of the Performing Arts Councils had an opera company, a drama company, a theatre company, and a ballet company. But with the new dispensation of South Africa, all of that was disbanded. And of course, a lot of the companies folded completely. And some of the companies continued, which Cape Ave Ballet Company, thank God, did, and became Cape Town City Ballet, which it is still today.
I think we just recently watched Giselle again, and it was incredible.
And I had a wonderful time in the company, and we were very lucky because we had a lot of visiting guest artists. David Poole, who was director, was an absolute tyrant, brilliant producer and director. He was also the head of the ballet school. So we got a lot of opportunities. And also, Jan, in those days, we did a lot of touring. And the company, because it was so big, the company was divided into two. And there was always a smaller tour and a bigger tour. I used to always go on the smaller tours, which was great because we got a lot of experience doing quite a lot of work that we might not have done in Cape Town. And, there were great ballets that we did. Veronica Paper was the resident choreographer who eventually took over from David Poole. She produced probably 20-something ballets during her career, and we were in all of those ballets. Mm. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful time. It really was. And there was a real ladder to climb within the company. And
there was an opportunity for growth, because that's the hard one at the moment in terms of the state of the arts.
Yes, yeah.
In the country right now. It's a
and there
challenge.
Was quite a star system in those days.
Yes.
You know, you had quarter ballet members, soloists, senior soloists, principal dancers. And so you had to get promoted to be able to do roles and whatever. But it was a wonderful time. I had always loved children, and it always freaked me out that the company was very white. Mm-hmm. I think there was one black dancer called Mzanki Jama. In the company.
It's amazing. You remember the name so well. And when you speak about male ballet dancers, I remember there was one in my entire school career, Lubin Shabalala. I wish one day I could actually still find him and find out if he still went on dancing. I remember some of the routines he would perform. Yeah. Lubin Shabalala, if anyone knows where he is, please let me know. I'd love to see what he actually ended up doing. But really amazing to see what people have had to do now in order for ballet to survive in a country like South Africa.
Yeah. And with my love of children and also the discrepancy of not having, you know, mixed company, so to speak, it really disturbed me a lot and felt it was so wrong. And I felt that if, you know, one was going to change things in this country, it all starts with children. We have to start educating children. And especially with ballet, it's a long training before you become a professional dancer. And you have to start, you know, at the age of 7.
Although there are interesting dancers, for example, Misty Copeland, who was part of the American Ballet Theatre.
Yeah.
I think she started at the age of 13.
Yes.
But that, again, is an absolute anomaly. Very, very unusual.
And so I really felt that the company needed to develop an outreach education development program. So I approached Veronica Paper, who was then our director, and she said, well, Philip, go out and do it. I mean, I knew nothing really much about teaching, apart from the love that I had of dance. I did do some teaching method when I was a student at UCT, and I used to go to Manenberg and teach and whatever. And so that's really what happened. I then went to Guguletu, and I knew the headmaster of the Sufuili College in Guguletu, who was a former sort of friend of my family, and spoke to him and said, could I use a studio, well, it was actually a classroom. And we had a wooden floor put down and ballet bars put in this classroom. And that's how I started teaching. And I had quite a lot of boys, I think because I was a male,
and again,
it encouraged other boys.
You can only do what you can see. And that's the thing for me, to have the visibility of people who look like you in something like ballet does make a difference.
So a lot of boys were sort of fascinated by me and whatever. And that's how it all really started. And then we started doing a little bit of performances and whatever, and it started developing. And I could see the need for having more classes. And at that time, I think I was only teaching twice a week. But it was difficult because I would work with a ballet company in the morning and then go out and teach on a Tuesday afternoon and a Thursday afternoon. But then I felt it wasn't going to be enough. We needed to do more. And I kept doing this for quite a while, but I ended up getting burnout. I'm a Scorpio.
Mr. You're a Scorpio. Sorry, Mr. Boyd. I just have to say that I'm listening to the back end now of all of this because I was one of the recipients of the outreach projects that you did. And I'm so glad that you did. And apologies that you pushed yourself to the point of burnout because Scorpios are so passionate and they go all out. But it's amazing the impact that you've made on so many young lives. And I just want to take this moment to say thank you for pushing as hard as you did, because it made a huge impact on the path that I took in life.
Oh, wonderful. And the organization sort of developed, and it was originally called Ballet for All. And I kind of copied the name of the Royal Ballet, had a similar program. But then 5 years later, I felt this is crazy. We're working in a black community. They need to do African dance. They need to do contemporary dance. I mean, I was a pure classicist myself. And classical ballet training is the best training you can have for any kind
of
dance.
It's for any kind of... Absolutely. And it's even, you know, when we speak about the contemporary dance and African dance, I don't know if you've seen it, I'll send you some links to this as well, but there's a young man who's championing Ama Ballet, Ama Piano mixed with ballet. And it is phenomenal because it's taking the world by storm. They actually did an interpretation for Bridgerton and the launch of this Netflix series. But it was so beautiful to see African dance woven with ballet. But you need to have good ballet basic training.
Yes. And so, the organization developed. And what I did, I then started training my senior girls to become teachers. I'm not good with languages. I mean, I learned in Khoza to say, sit down, shut up, stretch your legs, you know, whatever.
All important things for discipline in ballet, yes.
But I got these senior girls. We then eventually, we started a thing called the David Poole Trust after David Poole died, and we raised money, and my late wife, Phyllis Spira, was wonderful in raising funds. And so we set up the trust to be able to buy a CD machine and some equipment and dance togs and whatever. And then I felt we needed to expand not only to teach in Guguletu, but to start teaching elsewhere. But I found a hall in Guguletu. It was actually a civic center, but it wasn't used or utilized. And I then spoke to the woman who was sort of so-called running it, and I said, well, could we partner with her? And she said yes, and I said, well, what we would do every year, we would start raising money and put a wooden floor down and ballet bars. So I met the architect. There was a small stage. We extended the stage. We bashed out walls. And that became our sort of studio in a way. So we taught there every day. But I then decided that we needed to expand to Nyanga, to Langa, to Khayelitsha, and which we did. And I then had to start getting more people to help. And eventually I then felt that I really needed to spend more time with this project. And spoke to Veronica, our director, and said that I think I need to start stopping doing principal roles. And I started doing character principal roles because time was of the essence in spending more time with students.
But that's very giving of yourself, because you basically, not sacrificed, but...
Had to give up my stage.
Your lead role.
Really, yes.
To become the supporting role to so many.
But I just felt it was so important for this country. And, you know, I could see the need and... the energy and enthusiasm from these children and how much they needed this. And we became the cement of society. Mm. You know what it's like in our communities, disadvantaged communities, how little they have. Mm. And we became their mentors, their teachers, their parents, their everything in their life, because there was nothing in the township. Mm. You know, there were little girls that were very young that were raped. Mm. And where the dance was a place that they felt that this was safe place for them, and that they were comfortable, and that they could be comfortable with us, and it gave them confidence, and they could express themselves. And also, you know, teaching dance is a very physical, you're touching, you're holding, you've got to...
It's therapy.
Yeah, it is therapy.
I must say this. Yeah. I think having experienced the impact of what dance can do, it is therapy.
Yeah.
And I think even that's why I've started now again in my mid-40s. But it is therapy. It is a moment where your mind can be still and you learn to communicate with your body in a very different way.
Yeah, yeah. And Phyllis and I, we had obviously quite a lot of very talented students, and we had a lot of male students, which was unusual. And there was a young boy called Theo in Denver. Theo, in fact, sends his regards to you. I told him today that I was seeing you.
Oh, my goodness.
And Theo was my first male student. He was 10 years old when he started with us. And Phyllis and I fostered him. Mm-hmm. He lived with us for 14 years. And we sent him to UCT Ballet School. He did all his RAD exams. We then took him to London. And Lady Sainsbury, who was the patron of the Rombe Ballet School, was a great friend of Phyllis's. And she offered Theo a bursary to go to London. So he went to London. We raised money for him. And he spent 2.5 years in London. And he then went to Leeds, danced in Leeds, eventually came back, started his own company called Ikapa Dance Theatre. And at that stage, they were very talented students, and I really felt that they needed a better education. So I started a scholarship program and sent 12 students to Alexander Sinton High School in Athlone. And Phyllis then, at that stage, had left the ballet company after 35 years with the company. And she then started teaching these students every day, every afternoon, Theo being one of them. And there were some great, great students. And we had two generations of students who then went through the whole program from Standard 6 to matric. And it was wonderful. So we had a driver that I used to fetch them at 6 o'clock in the mornings, used to take them to school, used to go to ballet company, work at the ballet company all day, go to teach in the afternoons, go and fetch them after school, take them back home. And eventually we got our own driver and transport, and he did all of that.
I mean, it's your own, you're running a school, a family school, essentially.
Yeah. And then eventually I felt that we needed more space, and we moved to the Joseph Stone Theatre in Athlone, and we had the use of...
The Joseph Stone Theatre isn't there a hospital close by? Now, or there's a school for children also with disabilities
So we had one room that was our office. We were able to use a studio, and then I said,
that's the building as you're driving to Cape Town Airport. Right, yes, it's quite a prominent building. Yes.
And we then had the scholarship program. We were able to then start doing quite a lot of performances and expose the organization quite a lot more, which was great. And then I said to Phyllis, this is fine, but we also start need to do some touring, like I did when I was a student.
Yes.
And then
you have to have exposure to these places.
So we took 35 kids on tours, one-night stand tours, to Montague, to Barrydale, to Robertson, to Ladysmith. And we went for a week. And the kids stayed in school hostels, and we did performances. But it was great for the kids and great for these audiences who couldn't believe that these black kids could do classical ballet. Yeah, so the perceptions of people changed, and I then said to Veronica, I think that some of our students need to be in the production of Nutcracker as little kids. And, I mean, there was quite a lot of controversy about that, and I'll never forget...
Which time was this now?
That would have been in the 80s.
In the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is still apartheid South Africa.
Yeah.
And how did you go about... Because I remember I did... Yes, it was still the Nico Milan.
Yeah,
I did a production, The Bluebird of Happiness.
Okay,
I played a cherub. Mm. And I just remember I was going to school, and then there would be a bus coming to fetch us, and we would go to the Nico Milan, which is now the Artscape. Mm. But it was amazing to watch. We'd go and pick up kids from all over. That was my first exposure to the southern suburbs, because there's always a thing between the northern suburbs kids and the southern suburbs. The southern suburbs kids are a lot more sophisticated, uh-huh. we always thought. But to have a chance to dance on those stages for me as a young girl in apartheid South Africa meant the world, because I felt that I could walk onto these stages on equal footing. And that for that moment, it did not matter where I'd grown up, which side of the railway tracks I came from. I was dancing and I was whichever character yeah. I was told to be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I brought my artistry to that character.
Absolutely, yeah. And so it did change the perceptions of a lot of people. And I'll never forget, there was a white mother who came to me one day and said, "Philip, do you realize how intimidating this is for my child to be with all these black children?" I said, "Excuse me, for our kids, it's like going from Earth to the moon. You know, I mean, let's get a life here." So it did change a lot of people's thinking.
I think Mr. Boyd and Philip, I know I'm supposed to, but it's just so ingrained in me, Mr. Boyd. But I think that to me is another big thing about the world of art, the art world, performance, is unless we have different perspectives, our own story, or you'll only believe your own one true story. And there's that beautiful essay and book as well about the danger of a single story. It is so important that we open up our eyes to different perspectives.
Absolutely.
Especially in a country like South Africa.
Yeah, yeah. And going back to my own story, I was actually, not many people know it, I was adopted as a child. Yeah. And I think a lot of what I did with Ballet for All, Dance for All, was not only because I was a dancer and I'd love to see bodies develop and train young kids. It was about me having had an incredible life through this wonderful art form and how privileged I was to have had parents who gave me that opportunity and never said, you know, you're going to be an academic, which I didn't follow that route. And they allowed me to develop. And my love of children, and I just felt that it was so important for me to be able to give children a life that I had and share that. Because I often, you know, I think back where my life could have been or wouldn't have been had I not had the incredible parents that I had. When I was adopted from birth. So I don't know, you know, I never met my parents. It's a thing that I always regret in a way. I'm Portuguese. My parents came from Portugal, Madeira. And because often people say, "Philip, but you don't sound South African. I've got quite a dark skin." But, you know, how lucky I was and how fortunate I was to have followed my dreams and my aspirations. But creating those for so many thousands of other children was my gift to them and to myself, which was great. And Phyllis and I, we fostered another student called Naba Mafilike, who also went to Alexander Sinton. He was the second generation of scholarship students. He's now teaching and running an outreach program in Ashton, in a township called Zanani, and sort of doing what was taught to him to hundreds of other children, which is great.
And I hope to be doing that as well through my foundation, because I love that saying, a candle loses none of its light by lighting another candle.
Absolutely.
You and your late wife have lit so many candles, and they'll continue to shine for many, many
years. And every ripple makes another ripple.
Absolutely.
No matter how small it is, that's what it does. And eventually, yeah, what happened is that students of ours, and mostly male students, they then joined Kappa Ballet Company. Mm. Quite a lot of our students went to Europe, and a wonderful student of ours called Nolianda Makalwana came from Yomalela Primary in Khayelitsha. She was, I think, 7 when she started with us. But even at that age, I could see that she had this star quality. And she had this tiny little physique. And she went, I arranged some sponsorship for her, and she went to Switzerland. And she eventually went to Hamburg, and she got into The Lion King. And she's been in productions all over the world. And it's just incredible how her career skyrocketed. You know, and she became
and an
such
opportunity,
a role model.
An opportunity presents itself, and she used it.
Yeah, yeah. And that happened to many of our students. But quite a lot of the male students got into Cape Air Ballet Company as well. So it's been a whole circle, which has been wonderful to see. And that's what life is about.
Absolutely.
And it's about sharing,
absolutely,
you know, one's knowledge. And that's the incredible thing about the arts, mm, is that we have to share it to continue, mm, what the life it has. Mm. It's about the, you know, it's passing on that knowledge.
Absolutely.
And giving others the knowledge that we gained from wonderful, wonderful people that we were very privileged to have been taught
absolutely
by.
I think there's this perception of art, performance art, visual art, of it being quite elitist. But I think that's, by keeping it that way, it's a sure way of killing it eventually.
Yeah.
It has to be shared. It has to be made more accessible.
Yes, yes.
Firstly, it can have an impact on so many lives in so many different ways.
Yeah.
But it has to be accessible,
absolutely,
to more people, yeah, for it to have longevity.
Yeah. And to make it more popular to the masses,
mm,
that's what we need to do,
mm,
which is so very, very important. And, you know, Phyllis was this incredible, I mean, I still talk about her as if, you know, she died 18 years ago. And we had this incredible relationship. She was 13 years older than me. And I started going out with her when I was 18.
Mm.
It was quite a scandal at the time. You know, for an older woman to be with a younger man in the 70s.
You love who you love.
Absolutely, absolutely. She was Jewish, I'm Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
But we had this connection and we had this love for one another.
Mm.
But she was such a young, vibrant, mm, generous human mm being, even though she was this great legend in her mm own lifetime.
Of only
prima
ballerina,
assoluta, yeah.
I mean, Phyllis
yeah
Myra.
Yeah, yeah. But she was so generous and I it was always so amazed at the generosity of spirit, and she was such a voice of reason, and you know, one learned so much from her. But she was very honest and would never, you know, lose sight of what needed to be done, and because she was teaching, you know, kids that she never taught before and not on a professional level, it was very different for her. But she took to it like a duck to water and had this incredible eye, and you know, eye for detail. And that's why she raised this amazing standard of work within the Dance for All organization.
I want to sort of jump onto a story that I read there about her going and doing an outreach and being attacked. And she actually went back the next day. Can you relay
yes
that story?
Yeah, it was in Google Earth. And we used to do, well, I was always trying to raise funds. And we used to have tour groups coming to Google Earth once a week. And they would basically come into the hall, watch us teach, and we would do a little bit of a performance. And it was a day that people were coming. It was a German tour company, I think. And Phyllis was coming to teach. I got to the hall before she did. She arrived with one of our students. And as she got out of her vehicle, somebody came out of the hall and grabbed her handbag and took a knife and stabbed her in the hand, grabbed her handbag, and the handbag she had was actually a handbag that Dulcie Howes had given her, so it had a great
emotional
connection to her. Stole her with the handbag, and she had taken out, I think, 500 rand for electricity that day or whatever, for food, and, you know, her ID book was taken and everything was taken, and there was a wonderful doctor, I never forget, across the road, and he looked like Sidney Poitier. I think Phyllis was in love with him. And anyway, she was taken across the road and he bandaged her up and gave her an injection. And she came across the road and she taught that afternoon. The next day she came back and taught again. But I was so incensed and I was so upset. I felt so responsible for this terrible attack that had happened to Phyllis, my wife. And here we were making a difference in a community, you know, where it should never have happened. And I was so mad that I actually got hold of the Minister of Police. And I thought, we've got to make a story about this, which we did. It was in the Sunday Times and all the papers, and there was a dreadful picture of Phyllis. But I thought, we've got to make a stand here. And we're not going to be thrown out of this township because of something like this and be frightened. We have to stay here. And that's why we have to stay here, to make a difference and to change the minds of others. And the guy that stabbed Phyllis, his father was a policeman, and he got off on 500 rand bail.
I remember somewhere I read that somebody asked, how could she actually go back and teach? And she said the person who stabbed her was not one of her students.
Right.
And to me, that personified the queen and the absolute hero
yeah
that she was.
Yeah. Yeah. But about 25 years ago, I was, you know, I used to take kids from the township on a Saturday to see performances. Mm-hmm. And I used to get a Cape Air vehicle, a combi or whatever. And I remember it was one Saturday and I was taking them back to Kalichi, but it was an area I didn't know very well. And we stopped at a stop street. Five guys came. They had a gun and they put a gun to my head. And I thought, you know what? If you're going to kill me, kill me. Mm-hmm. But they looked and they saw these kids, the back of the car, and they just put the revolver back and they walked away. Mm-hmm. I was very lucky that, you know, nothing happened. But there were many, we had many, many other incidents that happened along the route. Mm. But we survived and we just kept going back and we kept teaching and doing what we felt we had to do.
It's a beautiful resilience. And again, I think it's so important to continue the work because the less than 1% of people who do harm are not the 99.something% of the people who are actually so happy to be shown a different way of being.
And you know, another story, there was a little girl. She was a wonderful girl, and she was raped. I think she was 12 years old. And I was really upset about this, but she and I had we had a very good relationship. Mm. And whenever she saw me, she would always run to me and hold me. Mm. And I felt after this incident, what happened with her, she started having these panic attacks, and she would collapse in class. Mm. And I was very worried about her, obviously, and we got help for her. But I didn't know whether I should still do what I did before. Mm. Should I still hold her? Mm. Because I'm a male,
and the trauma
that she went through, will she be frightened because I'm going to, you know, comfort her and come into her space? But I thought, no, Philip, you've got to do what you've always done. Mm. And in fact, it was the best thing I did because she
needed a safe space.
That space, And we became very, very close. Mm. And it was wonderful to see how she developed and she got over, well, does one ever get over something like that? But yes, it helped her and it cushioned her, having the classes and being with other people and whatever, you know. But there were so many stories with these kids because they came from so many broken backgrounds, you know, and a lot of, especially the boys, most of them didn't have fathers. Mm. And so, you know, I was the father and the teacher and the everything.
We need more father figures and role models.
We do. And the boys were harder than the girls because I really had to hold them. Mm. You know, they would on the weekends get completely drunk and on Monday they wouldn't be in class and whatever.
And ballet brings discipline. I think that's
absolutely.
That's what I love. It's an art form that brings discipline. Yeah. Of course, creativity, it's important in the artistry, but I love that combination as well that exists in ballet. Yeah. You have your artistry, but the discipline is one of the fundamental building blocks of someone who's a good dancer.
So the organization developed and grew, and the place we had in Google Asia, that also became difficult because whenever we did performances, we always did a big performance at the end of every year, which was great, and you know the whole community would be there. But what would happen, Joanne, is that the toilets weren't working. Then there was no water. Then there was the grass had grown and there was no upkeep and whatever. And then we would have to pay for all of these things every year. And then I thought, no, you know, we need to have our own home. So I approached the Ackham Family Foundation. Gareth Ackham and I were in the army together. And I didn't know Gareth.
So the army did actually do some good.
It did. And Gareth obviously knew me and followed my career and all that sort of thing. And I then approached him and I said, Gareth, won't you buy us a building? Mm. And I've always been interested in property. And so I started looking for properties in Athlone. Mm. And I looked in Salt River and obviously for ballet, you need big space, high ceilings and whatever.
Yes, for a studio, yes.
And I found a building opposite the Athlone railway station. And told Gareth about it, and he came and looked at it, and his advisor said, no, it's not a good area. And at that stage, there were a lot of druggies and whatever in the area, and they said, no, they didn't think it was good. And I said, no, stop right there. Can you imagine if this place was renovated and that we were working here? Suddenly it would change the ilk of the people that were there. The society would change in that area. And they eventually agreed, and I told him to offer whatever it was, which he did. And we then had to raise, I think, 2.6 million rand to renovate the building. We then had to break walls. We put ballet floors down, ballet bars, and you know, we had a wardrobe for costumes and all the space. We now have this fantastic home in Athlone. We've been there since 2007, and I'm so pleased that Phyllis worked there before she died. It was a year before she died that she was able to work there. And we've named the one studio, the Phyllis Spira Studio, and it's just so nice to have our own home there. Which is great. So we would then bus students in. The more talented students would come in every day. The driver would fetch them after school. They would then come and do classes. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the staff would go out to Gugulu, to Kalicha, Langa, Nyanga. And we then developed an outreach program, a rural outreach program in Montague and Barrydale.
My dad told me of Barrydale because I think that's
and Riversdale and Worcester we teach as well. So that it has expanded. And I think the organization today has 1,500 students from 35 students when I first started. But it got to the point, Joe, and where I always, you know, ended up having to fundraise all the time. And we had to, it was, and we had to raise about 5 million rand a year. And I was just going from one meeting to the next. And I was never in the dance studio. I love teaching and I love coaching. So I was getting further removed from the artistic side of things.
And that's where your heart lies.
Yes. And so when I turned 61...
I'm too scared to ask how old are you now.
I'll be 70 this year.
70 this year?
Yeah. And so I thought, when I got to that point, I thought, I really need to start thinking of slowing down, which I did when I turned 61 at the end of that year, and handed over the reins to Alison Hendricks, who I think has been in contact with you. And she's doing a wonderful, wonderful job. So I'm just an honorary patron now. So thank God I'm not involved in fundraising. I still obviously follow the organization a lot and am very interested in what goes on. It's run very differently to what it was when I ran it.
But it's a new era.
And it's things a new have era. Changed.
I've now followed you to Hermanus because I'm coming to a goal. you speak about I'm following you now, Mr. Boyd or Philip. What made you decide to teach adult ballet? I mean, adult ballet seems to be having its own season these days.
Yeah.
What made you decide to teach
it here? Well, I love teaching. And, you know, when I moved here 9 years ago, you know, so many people came and said, Philip, are you going to start a studio? I said, no. I don't want to get involved and, you know, in that sort of, you know, 24/7. Mm. So that's when I decided that, you know, teaching adult classes would be really nice. There's no pressure. There are no exams. And it's just enjoyment. And I've got a wonderful group of about 10 ladies. They aren't always able to come, you know, every single week. I only teach once a week. I didn't want to be tied down now that I've retired. Two of my best friends, we share a house in Cape Town. So I do go through to Cape Town once every 2 weeks because I love going to the theatre, seeing friends and whatever. And I have a house in Sandby that I love. I'm a very keen gardener, love gardening. And I have a little Dachshund dog who's my baby and take him for lots of walks and, you know, have a lovely social life here and just really enjoying my retirement. But my ladies that I teach are all fascinating. There are artists, there's a radiologist, there's a psychologist. So they're all professional people in their own right. And we have a lovely, lovely time. And it's great fun.
Well, I look forward to being a guest dancer.
Great.
I'm really excited. And to me, it's such a beautiful full circle moment to be able to dance with you now again after I danced with you in the 80s in apartheid South Africa, where I had no idea where life would take me. And now I have the opportunity, hopefully, to do what you did for others. So thank you very, very much.
In fact, Sue, I think it's
Sue de Moyencourt.
Sue and I, we were students together. And she was at UCT when I was, we were both students at the same time.
So I dance at Sue's studio. Yeah. Tarina is my teacher.
Okay, yeah.
And she also, all my daughters go to ballet too. So to me, it's also just one of those things. It's so lovely to have a shared passion with
Absolutely.
My kids.
Wonderful.
Absolutely love it. I do have one question from my eldest daughter. And she said, we looked at all of the performance pictures and some of the beautiful photographs you have with your wife as well. But she said, I have to ask you, which was your favorite performance of your life?
Difficult question. Mm. I think every performance was special. Mm. But yes, there are certain ballets like Giselle.
Mm. Albrecht.
Albrecht, was very, very special. I think that because it was the first principal role I did with Nicolette, I love dancing with Nicolette. She's a wonderful, wonderful teacher, is still teaching. I mean, I was lucky because I had many other partners as well. Juanita Yazbek was one of my partners, a wonderful dancer called Anne Wixley. Is sadly not dancing anymore, but we did Spartacus. Spartacus was another ballet that was great. But I was always a very sort of a classical, more princely. You know, that was my kind of...
Your forte.
Yeah.
And such theatre words.
When I was cast in the role of Spartacus, it was a completely different role for me. And I, you know, had to go to the gym and build up my body in a different, completely different way, and your legs were more turned in and whatever. But yeah, no, every ballet I did, I loved. But as I have said, there were certain ballets that were special. Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty, Giselle were my favourite. And Romeo and Juliet was another incredible ballet because you got so involved and the technique just took over because the acting takes over and you really become that person. And I just feel so blessed that I had such a lovely career. I wasn't a, you know, I had a good technique. I wasn't a pyrotechnician. I was a very good partner and you know, had a good personality on stage. But I think I was, you know, in the right place at the right time and having wonderful teachers, wonderful coaches, and, you know, and just being very blessed. And how fortunate I was to have had the career that I had.
And how fortunate I am that you came into my life. So thank you very, very much, Philip.
Pleasure.
Thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
So I'm the youngest in this class, but I can tell you this, I feel like I'm an absolute duck out of water. The pace of this class, absolutely amazing. And what a beautiful full circle moment. I think Mr. Philip Boyd last taught me when I was 7 years old. And then to be back here now, learning from him, an absolute privilege. So again, a candle loses none of its light by lighting another. And so I'm very grateful for this journey in the world of art. And hopefully I can light many candles on my way. I'm feeling so exhilarated after this class, and what a pleasure and a privilege to dance with my teacher, Philip. How long have you been doing ballet here?
So I've been doing almost just 2 years a year. Yeah, I was invited by Deirdre, and then it's almost like bring a buddy to class. And she invited me, and I came, and I was hooked here. I'm a Pilates instructor, so I think just to... that add-on will be excellent. I mean, and you are never too old to start something new. So I did ballet when I was in primary school, but then obviously growing up in a small town, the opportunities was like not much. And then, yeah, I was invited and I started at age 50.
I'm absolutely and amazed.
I'm the youngest, I think. And
you're the youngest in the class, and I think we have somebody who's 77 in the class. Can you tell me what made you decide to start ballet? Because you invited her.
She's my Pilates instructor, so I could see her body movements, and I knew she'd be a natural. So I started as a little girl, and then got invited to another class in Amanus, and that teacher relocated. So then someone told me about full. So I only joined them about 5 years ago.
An absolute master and legend.
We're very, very lucky.
I'm jealous. Yeah.
You should join us.
I'll come when I can. I definitely will. I definitely will. Thank you very much.
Thank you for visiting. It's a privilege to meet you and dancing.
Oh, it was so lovely dancing with you. Thank you so much. To dance with you again after I don't know how many years this is. Gosh, I think it's probably about 40 years later. It was such a pleasure and a privilege. And I must say, the pace of this class, I underestimated. I'm completely drenched.
Well, I try to keep that going.
You keep the pace going. I think it's also, I must say, your mind exercises as much as your body.
Absolutely.
So for me, what would you say, how would I encourage more people to start ballet as adults?
Well, I just think it's the most wonderful exercise, you know. And I think for every human being, we all need to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. Fantastic. Muscle memory, and, you know.
Muscle memory.
Yeah.
I'm amazed. You're almost 70. You're coming close to, and your grand battement, it's amazing. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Merci. Saskia, ek is so bly. I'm so happy to have done this class with you. And I just want to ask you, when did you start? At what age did you start ballet?
I started when I was about 7, and I finished at the age of 11. And then I never did ballet again until I heard about Phil. And that chance I couldn't let go.
So tell me, I have to ask, and I know it's improper to ask a lady, but I'm so inspired by you. I've just done an entire class with you. I am drenched. And you are amazing to watch. May I ask how old you are now as you're doing ballet?
77 going on 78 in November.
77 going on 78, and you started when you were 7, had a break, and here we are. So that to me is how art gives us a long, beautiful life. Thank you very much, Saskia.
Thank you, Joanne. It was wonderful meeting you, and you were such fun.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
And you must keep on dancing.
I will. And I will join you again in the future.
Yes, please do. It was lovely having you.
Thank you so much.